Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, joined today by Mr. Martin van Staden. Hi, Martin.
Howdy. Good to be back. Happy New Year to you and Chris and to the audience. Hope it's going to be a good one.
Indeed. And also, Mr. Chris Hutton. Chris, how are you doing?
Hi, Nick, Martin. Good to see you guys. Yeah, Martin's already upset me by saying Happy New Year after the 10th of January. It's like saying, I hope this email finds you well. So thanks, Martin. Looking forward to
that. I do that as well in my emails, as you know.
And unfortunately, we've got a completely white male, slightly bearded, sort of 30s-ish kind of crew here. So, you know, if that disturbs you, you should probably switch off now. But anyway. Let's start off with our first story, and I'm in far too good of a mood to talk about this story because this is really depressing. And this is a story that I had heard, I'd seen little bits of the details of in the news, I think, last year, and I didn't really pay a huge amount of attention to it. But I probably should have because it's getting really insane. So the University of Fort Hare, once, you know, an institution where a lot of famous South Africans have gone through education at some point, is having a very serious problem with what seems to be an emerging trend of 2023 assassination. So the Vice Chancellor Sakhela Bahlangu has said that he is not going to meet with higher education blade in Zimande on Wednesday or today, as was previously planned, because firstly, the university is in a state of mourning, but secondly, he's not sure whether he can avoid an assassination attempt if he comes back to campus. The spark of all of this is that very recently, the vice chancellor had an assassination attempt on his life, which took the life of one of his bodyguards. Someone drove past his house and shot at his car, which he wasn't in at the time, with a which seems to be some kind of automatic rifle, taking the life of one of his bodyguards, a man named Mobinele Vesele, who died on Friday night in this assassination attempt. The university has said that it is implementing a new security plan and that until such a time as the security plan has been properly implemented to ensure the safety of senior management, the vice chancellor will not be going onto campus because he's at too much risk of assassination. On Sunday, or at least in the Sunday Times, Bahlangu gave an interview to the Sunday Times talking about this assassination attempt and a lot of the problems at the University of Fort Hare. He says that he is working currently with the Special Investigative Unit to clamp down on various corrupt networks in the university, feeding off of its contracts, and that the university's fleet manager, a guy called Pietrus Roots, was killed in what seems to be an assassination attempt last year. Shots have been fired at senior officials' homes, and people have found bullets in their fridge after people attempted to kill them. He said in this interview, universities are becoming killing fields and it cannot be business as usual. It is getting very close now. The SIU is going to nab big people. The big people are at risk. That's why they want to kill this thing off. And the only way to kill it off is to kill me. Bahlangu has been the vice chancellor of this university since 2017. And after he was in charge for a couple of years, in 2021, the university received its first clean audit in 30 years. So that seems to suggest that he is making some progress in fixing some of the corruption problems at that university. But man, this is crazy stuff. Vice chancellors of universities fearing for their lives from assassination, having been protected like, I don't know, mafia bosses. Chris, let's start with you. What do you make of this story?
Yeah, I wonder when you increase the incentives and the especially the salary that comes with these limited positions, because of course you get government funding and then you need to tick a number of boxes and put a number of graduates through and all that sort of stuff. Maybe you increase the risks for this sort of thing to take place. The stakes become ever higher. I mean, we see this across other sectors in the economy as well now, in construction, things like that. These mafias taking hold. So I want to understand it in that bigger context. I think then you set things up to possibly go in this direction. It won't always, fortunately, play out in such a heinous way, but you increase the possibility that it will happen. I also would just wonder how exactly you plot a path out of it, because you have to get rid of, number one, the incentives, but the systems as well. And then does that just mean getting new people in? I think it requires a bit more deeper work than that sort of thing. Looking at four tiers specifically, I mean, for someone who studied in the Eastern Cape, Rhodes and four tier had a pretty close relationship always, and there was an element of trying to help Forte and uplift it in a way that would help uplift local communities and that sort of thing, and help people maybe who can't afford to go to other, you know, traditionally very big universities like Stellenbosch or Wits, etc. So it's sad to see the decline of the institution, and that there was possibility for some kind of turnaround. It wouldn't happen overnight, obviously, but there was some hint of this. So we wonder now if this has now just been set back sort of permanently, or what can be done going forward. So I think all in all, yet another concerning story from the Eastern Cape, which seems to suffer quite a lot compared to the other provinces, at least. If you think things are bad for you in Gauteng or the Western Cape, maybe, and this is not to discount if things are bad there for you, but at least you aren't in the Eastern Cape.
I think what's really concerning to me here is it seems as though, you know, for a long time in South Africa, we had this problem of political assassinations, of assassinations, but they were usually at a fairly low level. It was people in usually KZN, mostly ward councillors, mostly either ANC or IFP, or in some cases, I guess, later NFP politicians who were assassinating each other. But it really seems that at least in 2022 and so far in 2023, that the whatever was holding back criminal groups, malevolent political forces and such from using assassination seems to be falling apart, and they seem to be becoming more widespread. Martin, what do you make of all this? This is clearly something that we need to get a handle on. How do we solve a problem if we have organized crime running around killing whoever they like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so look, this is another one of the consequences of this statification of education, of whatever else you have. As our colleague Anfia Jeffrey talks about often when she talks about the National Democratic Revolution, one of the important points is that positions in the broad state sector, and this includes state-owned universities, municipalities, as you've pointed out, these are all just slots. These are little things where a person gets slotted in. It's not like, as a ward counselor, you actually need to be a member of the community, well involved, everyone knows you, trusted by your constituency. That doesn't matter. Now at university, you don't have to be an educator, you don't have to have a history in the administration of education or anything like that. The only thing that matters is your party loyalty, the extent to which you've been a good cadre. And if you've been a good cadre, you get slotted in. Now, as you rightly point out, as the taps in South Africa's economy, or at least the patronage tap, start running dry, the more the ANC and their other leftist economic partners run the economy into the ground, these positions get fewer, the taps start running dry, and the competition, and we tend to use, as liberals and free marketeers, we use the word competition very positively usually, but in this context, the competition for these positions gets bloody. It's been bloody for a long time in municipalities, and now it's expanding, and it's probably going to expand past the universities as well into other areas of statification.
Well, it's definitely happening in SOEs.
Yes, now of course. I mean, with Andre de Reiter recently, and I'm not even sure to what extent it's already been happening at lower levels of ESCOM, for instance. I think it's almost one of those things that have become normalized in South Africa, where people get killed and different cadre gets slotted in. Now, you don't really see this in the private sector. Of course, we see it with, as Chris mentioned, the construction sector. These mafias are coming from outside the companies and intimidating them and using violence against them. But you don't see colleagues at construction companies killing each other to get a promotion or anything like that. It just doesn't really happen in the private sector, because the private sector is subject to a whole set of other incentives and structures than does the political sector, where service delivery is not really important, where the price mechanism and market signals and merit are not necessarily the overriding considerations. Now, a lot of people will think, okay, all we need to do is investigate these murders, get the perpetrators, throw them in jail, maybe get rid of the culture of corruption in South Africa, then we'll be fine. No, I think that fundamentally misses the point. We need, I'm always going to be that guy on the show, but we need to privatize the universities, probably starting with Fort Hare and other institutions where these things are starting to rear their ugly heads. So that before these people can even become involved in the university community, they should be excluded. That people don't kill each other for promotions. That an outsider who is apparently going to provide textbooks and is competing for a tender isn't even considered, because a private company, a private university wouldn't even look at them. They would base it on references. They would base it on prior service delivery records. These political things that happen where, oh, no, but I'm a good caterer, I will provide the textbooks, that won't even enter into the discussion. And that's only possible if you move away from this statification of everything towards privatizing those things, letting market forces in. And that's what I think is fundamentally going to be the solution, not only at Fort Hare, but to Eskom. We won't see people necessarily trying to kill the CEO of a private electricity company. It does happen, of course, but it won't be such a almost... I wasn't surprised when Andre de Reuter said someone tried to kill him. I was like, oh, yeah. Sure, of course, someone tried to kill you. We're trying to root out corruption. So let's find the fundamental issue here, and that is the statification, the making of a university or a electricity utility a commons, opening it up to everyone to just eat, as the ANC likes to frame it. Make it private, make it profit-driven, make it respond to market incentives. And then I think we'll have done a big job, a big part of solving this problem.
Chris, I mean, there's many things to talk about with these kind of growing things of assassination. I think part of the problem, I think a lot of what Martin says is a great way to start solving the problem. But I do also think we've got this problem now of entrenched organizations which, you know, their business is shaking things down for money, and there's going to be a lot of effort to get rid of them, because once you have that kind of that second level of when you've got people in that business, it's a little bit like the drug cartels in the US, where you know, they may have been caused by the fact that they were selling illicit drugs, but once the drugs have been legalized in places like Colorado, they then just move into other businesses. And once they've been created, you actually have to kind of dismantle them. And I think that once again, we're kind of coming back to the central problem here, which is that the police just do not do the most basic function of what a state is supposed to be there for, which is protecting life, liberty, and property. I don't know how we untangle this. What's interesting also about Bladen Simande's planned visit was he was supposed to be coming along with Bheki Cele, police minister. You'd think that if the police minister was coming to visit your university, you wouldn't be too worried about being killed to meet him. But apparently, the vice chancellor of Fort Hare does not have much confidence in the police service.
Now, when the next bout of violent protest erupts on the scale that we saw in 2021, then we can comfort those people whose businesses and lives suffer under that by telling them that the police were busy pulling off motorists in the posh suburbs in Johannesburg and Cape Town instead of spending time on these actual issues where the resources need to be spent. We're often told how strained, and we can see it in the data, how strained public resources, public spending can become and is becoming, that there's less money going around. But then you would think maybe targeted a bit better, or if you're in any way going to argue for some kind of capable state, some kind of developmental state, maybe then focus on developing the basics, like police, intelligence services, that sort of thing.
Yeah, you don't build a Jenga tower from the top.
No, maybe that's some 4D chess that we haven't figured out yet.
Crazy stuff. And I have a very terrible feeling that this is not the last time in the year we get to talk about assassinations, but I hope that I'm wrong. Anyway, speaking of ESCOM and mucking about, the great new idea that the ANC seems to have come up with now to fix ESCOM is, you know, the real problem is that we didn't control it and micromanage it enough. And so there was a resolution taken at the ANC's conference in December that the responsibility for overseeing ESCOM needed to be moved directly to the Department of Energy so that it could be more tightly controlled by the Minister of Energy, who ultimately is supposed to be responsible for the sector of government. And there are some suggestions that this will mean that the Department of Public Enterprises, which oversees the SOEs, will be dissolved, or at least will have its biggest, I don't know, guardian thing that it's supposed to be the custodian of, taken away from it. Ramaphosa said it was a clear mandate from the conference. The resolution will be implemented. And so, I mean, Martin, I want your thoughts on this, but I mean, on one hand, like, it doesn't really seem to make a difference. You know, it's just moving from one government department to another. Who cares? In terms of the politics of it, this does seem to be empowering Guedes Montaño specifically. And I see many of the kind of environmentalist crowd are very upset, thinking that this will mean the end of all renewable energy programs. What's your take on this?
Well, first, I need to give some kudos to ESCOM. My power came on 10 minutes early just now, for those watching who noticed. So I feel very very privileged to have such a efficient utility governing the power in South Africa. Very happy about that. But, I mean, if like me, you've spent any amount of time reading the Electricity Regulation Act, the Electricity Act, the various regulations and so on issued that in any way, shape or form deal with the electricity production and transmission in South Africa, you'll notice that the minister that is always referred to is the Minister of Energy. The Minister of State-Owned Enterprises, of Public Enterprises, does not feature once. So this literally does not change anything. In itself, transferring ESCOM to the DOE or DPME actually doesn't change anything legally. So Guedes Montaño have all the same powers that he had legally under legislation and under regulations. I think the one thing that might change is that the shareholder, I think, of ESCOM was the Department of Public Enterprises, and that will now probably become the Department of Energy. I'm not sure to what extent that changes. I think Pravin Gordhan and Guedes Montaño share exactly the same dedication to state-owned, state-led development. So it's not like the shareholder will now suddenly change their tune. Of course, the greenies can cry me a river about their environmentalist concerns. If it's the end of renewable energy, that's fine. If Guedes actually does build some coal-fired power stations, that would be great, but he won't. He's been singing this song for many years. What in fact I think he wants is coal power plants for friends. He doesn't really want to open the market up to private coal-fired power station providers or nuclear power station providers. That's simply not on the agenda, so nothing changes there either. But I must say that this last part that you mentioned, Nick, that is quite positive, if true, that the Department of Public Enterprises would actually be closed down. I mean, goodness me. Talk about a silly institution. For the audience members who've watched Yes Minister and Yes Prime Minister, they had the Department of Administrative Affairs, which is effectively a department that kind of exists between all the other departments and like does their admin for them or something. And our Department of Public Enterprises is very much like that. You would imagine that PRASA, the passenger rail agency, would be under Department of Transportation, and in a way it is. You would imagine ESCOM is under Department of Energy, and in a way it is. But in a way, it's not. It's under the Department of Public Enterprise. So if we can get rid of this thing and not redeploy their staff, but fire their staff, make them unemployed, that would be great, because we have an overpaid and underworked civil service in South Africa. And if there's one positive thing that can come out of this kind of non-newsy event, it is that the Department of Public Enterprises should probably be closed down. So that's the one positive I can take out of this. But when you're talking about load shedding and the crumbling of our grid, this will change absolutely nothing. If Guede actually dedicated himself to building more coal-fired power stations, I would at least be a little bit more positive there. But I'm not seeing it. I think this the opportunity will only be used for self-enrichment, maybe a few more tenders for about the possibility of building more coal-fired power stations just to start enriching some more caterers. I don't see our solution here. As always, the solution is privatizing Eskom, demonopolizing Eskom, and deregulating the entrance of private providers into the sector.
So, Chris, I'm sure you agree with much of what Martin has said, but let me put it this way: couldn't it be said that, you know, maybe the only two reforms, near quotes, that we got from the Royal Pause administration was one, lifting the governing the generating cap on power, and two, that there was at least some sort of, I don't know what to call it, sludge-like slow movement towards buying some power from someone who isn't Eskom, and that this threatens to wreck even those minuscule little steps? I don't know. What do you think?
I think you're giving the New Dawn enough credit, because we're on the cusp of the passage of the expropriation bill. So reform is coming. Got the NHI as well, basic income grant. I mean, come on, Nick. You have to praise our glorious leader. And then I'm going to have to disagree with you on the lifting of the cap, because you still need a permit from NERSA. So, you know, all in all, yeah. Just to nitpick on that particular point. Look, I think you can get a new board at Eskom. You can move Eskom to a different government department. You can get as many new CEOs as you want, but you haven't changed the ideology underpinning the institution. You haven't changed those fundamental policies. So you won't see
any. You haven't shaken out the special interest groups who are holding control of it currently,
which were enabled, again, by the wrong ideas and policies. So you allowed the flourishing of that sort of thing to happen, because you simply don't have any incentives or systems for competition. For those who are concerned about South Africa's potential that will miss the renewable revolution, all that sort of stuff, there's a heck of a lot of money to be made there. There's a heck of a lot of funding. Don't worry, we still will be there. The government will just ensure that they get the contracts. I mean, things like localization requirements, preferential procurement. We're going to get renewable energy, but it will be because through components that we get through government.
And that was always going to be the case, regardless of who was in charge.
Yeah, exactly. So De Rade himself has said, he's worried that we won't get renewables because you can't steal the sun and wind. But the components to harvest those resources you have to get from overseas, in all likelihood. We can't manufacture it ourselves. And who approves where we get them from? Well, someone like Minister of Trade Ibrahim Patel. Doesn't he want to ensure that, you know, some people get contracts and some people don't? You know, just the possibility. Again, those systems and incentives. So,
Ibrahim Patel is the Minister of Economic Collapse.
Well, you know, put that on his CV. Yeah, I don't foresee much change if it moves to a different department, but it will be a case of Ramaphosa being able to say he tried. And maybe he can then hide behind the fact that, well, I tried to delegate, I tried to change things, but, you know, it's just difficult keeping all the interest groups on board. It's difficult. You have to keep the nuances into consideration, all that sort of stuff. Another thing for him to hide behind. But at the end of the day, it provides a convenient smokescreen to not implement actual reform.
Right. All right. Okay. For our last story, let's move on to another piece of government policy that's come out of the ANC conference here. And this is, I'm taking this from a quite fun editorial, actually, in the Business Live, which I think expresses it. I feel like any of us could have written it as well, because it expresses the kind of exasperation with the nonsense that comes out of these ANC policy conferences. But the opening line is, new year, newly elected leader, same prehistoric ideas. And the specific one they're talking about here is that Gwede Mantashe apparently said at the conference that the mandate of the Reserve Bank must be broadened to meet the needs of the economy. And the party's economic transformation head, Momoluko Kobayi, says that a constitutional amendment is required to do so. And we need to move ahead with ensuring that the Reserve Bank is focused on things like employment and economic growth. A less charitable reading might be that the Reserve Bank should print more money as being the real demand here. But this is kind of pushed back against by Ramaphosa, who did one of his usual sort of weaselly things of saying, no, don't worry. We're not going to do anything imminently. And anything that we do will go through a process of some kind, which is normally how he deals with this kind of thing. The editorial, however, points out that this, while this is not a great idea, it's also not a particularly new idea. And it's emblematic of the kind of lack of, you know, sort of mental energy in the ANC, that they called for this in 2007, 2012, and 2017, and now 2021. And it's basically been pretty much the same thing every single time, of saying, well, the Reserve Bank stands in the way of our glorious revolution to uplift the people of South Africa, or some sort of rubbish like that. Anyway, the editorial does say that investors needn't panic that any of this will actually happen. In their words, quote, you'd get better odds on Fikile and Balula going into the priesthood, which is a delightful idea to think about. Anyway, Chris, let me start with you. Do you think they're right to say that it's unlikely that the Reserve Bank is going to be messed with too much by the government? What do you make of the idea? Any thoughts you have?
Yeah, I think it won't be messed with too much because it's already being messed with all the time. It is a state institution, so it is effectively nationalized. There has been, to give the Saab, you know, credit, a sense of independence over the last 10 years, especially a sense of trying to look at facts on the ground to try and protect the value of the rand in so much as they can. In terms of the actual idea of changing the mandate of the Reserve Bank or possibly nationalizing it, go ahead. How is that going to resolve electricity constraints? How is that going to remove tariffs on imported goods? How is that going to take away taxes that form part of the fuel price? How is that going to make it easier for small black businesses to start up and get access to capital? Like, all that sort of stuff are the effects of the wrong policy choices. So the Reserve Bank can do as much as it wants to protect the value of the rand, but it runs into those supply side constraints. I mean, things like that drive inflation. The Reserve Bank can continue to hike rates. We import a lot of finished products. That's going to contribute to our high inflation regardless. So why don't we fix our ports on our rail, for example? You know, why don't we fix the roads and make it easier for truckers to move their goods, for farmers and people in the mining industry? Yeah, it very much smacks of wanting to look like you're doing something and wanting to resolve issues, but in substance, it'll likely exacerbate these issues. If you chip away at the independence of your central bank, you will again set your country on the wrong kind of path. And it might not happen overnight, but the sort of idea that we'll do it gradually, I mean, is gradual tyranny better than just overnight tyranny? I mean, you know, tyranny by a thousand cuts. Well, versus
that's kind of been Ramaphosa's thing, though. He says, no, Zimbabwe will never happen. We'll do it much more orderly.
Yeah, as long as it's done by ticking the right bureaucratic boxes, then I suppose violating people's rights and destroying the economic freedom is fine.
Martin, in 60 seconds or so, your thoughts?
As long as the ANC or any other left-wing institution is in power in South Africa, we are moving towards the printing of money. We've seen this story play out over the last more than a century. Since the existence of reserve banks around the world, when economic conditions get very bad and you have a broadly left-wing, economically at least, party in power, the printing presses start going brrr, as the meme would say. So that is always going to be a risk here. We've seen it recently in Zimbabwe. We've seen it in Venezuela. Further still back, we saw it in Weimar Germany. It's coming. It's certainly coming. Even if the Reserve Bank is unnationalized, as Chris is totally right, that it makes no real difference if it's nationalized or not. The South African Reserve Bank is a state institution. Make no mistake about that. It's not a private institution. It's recognized in the constitution of the country. There's something called the South African Reserve Bank Act. This is a state institution, and it's 95% under the direct control of the state, and moreover the Treasury and the President. So that the mechanisms of messing with the Reserve Bank and printing money are already there. It's just currently we have a sense of pragmatism inside the institution, which we're lucky to have. But for as long as we insist on keeping the broadly ANC-EFF type coalition in power, the risk of money printing and quantitative easing, or what is the new intellectualization of it, MMT, which stands for Magic Money Tree. If that sticks around, we're gonna have money printing. We're gonna have inflation in the hundreds or thousands of percentage points. So we need to discipline ourselves, as the ANC says in its strategy and tactics documents, when we go to the polls, and we need to choose anyone else. I'm not punting for any political party in specific here. Any political party that understands expanding the money supply is dangerous, especially now. So it's an electoral thing. But yeah, nationalization or not makes no difference. Old idea. We're gonna see the same story play out.
Right, and this also comes at a time that the international world is having unusually high inflation as well, particularly in the big economies of the West. But anyway. That is all the time we have for today. So thank you very much for listening. We hope that you found the show interesting. Please support us on whatever platform. Leave us comments if you have thoughts on the show. And we will see you tomorrow on The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone.